Welcome back to the Behind the Play podcast. My name is Alex Adams, and I'm once again joined by a friend of the show, of The Athletic, who covers the Montreal Canadiens, the one and only Arpan Basu. How are things? How's the kind of quasi summer, quasi vacation time been for you? After the Habs were eliminated about a month ago.
Yeah, it's been pretty relaxed trying to get a handle on what the Canadiens are going to be able to do this off season. There's a lot of interest slash angst slash concern slash excitement, anticipation. Like it's just like, and it's just this unknown, and it seems like there's just a lot of factors outside the Canadiens' control as to what they can do. So I've been trying to get my head around that. Presently, it's Grand Prix weekend here in Montreal, so it's probably my least favorite weekend of the year. It's a weekend I tend to try to be out of town, but I haven't been able to do that this weekend. But
Fair enough.
a lot of people love it. I think the I'm not a fan, but that's okay.
That's fair.
I like the race itself. I enjoy the race, but everything that goes around it is a bit much.
How fun was it just for you? I know it's been a couple of years for the, since the team made the playoffs, but just last season, like just the whole, them racing back and sneaking into the playoffs. How much fun was that for you as a journalist, as a writer, being in Montreal and kind of seeing the city kind of erupt again?
Well, from a journalist point of view, I'll give you an anecdote. Like one day, I guess in late March, it was a Saturday morning. We were at morning skate at the Bell Centre, and I turned over to a colleague of mine because we were like eagerly, I can't remember who it was, but we were like trying to figure out like who was if that's if a certain player was going to be in the lineup and what the lines look like. And I turned to a reporter. I was like, isn't it nice that the morning skate actually means something, and like that we don't have to come up with some sort of offbeat angle and sort of manufacture some kind of story out of this meaningless game, So it was fun to and that mindset as a reporter the last few years, that set in like December, January, and so you had like 3 months where you're just trying to make it all seem relevant, and it was nice to have that night's event be relevant and to cover it appropriately as a game and not walk in after a loss and try to find either silver linings or deeper meaning in one specific thing that happened and not never asking anyone about what happened in the actual game. Having the games be somewhat consequential and seeing how the players reacted to that reality was interesting. It was interesting to write about, and it's frankly it's easier. So it's fun to have games that matter and that people care about, so that you can actually cover the game and not look for some other angle. Let's say 35. The final 35 games or so.
I'm curious, in the intro you talked about how there's the Habs have a lot kind of balls in the air maybe and different what do you think those different situations, different, what are they looking at right now? And what's kind of up in the Habs land right now?
Well, it's a bit of a lame answer, but they're kind of looking at everything, right? And it's the one sense I've gotten is that it's a highly competitive marketplace for what the Canadiens are trying to do. There are a ton of teams trying to do what the Canadiens are trying to do. Everyone seems to want to get better. There doesn't seem to be too many teams that are willing to get worse in the short term to gather futures or to embark on some sort of build or continue some sort of build. All the teams that entered a rebuild kind of in and around the time Montreal did are trying to emerge out of that rebuild, right? And so that's what the Canadiens are trying to do. In Detroit, for instance, I'm sure it drove them nuts to see the Canadiens make the playoffs when they started this rebuild years after they did. Ottawa being another one. Obviously, Buffalo is perpetually trying to get out of a rebuild, but there's tons of Anaheim, who just got Kreider, like they're clearly trying to come out of this, and you know, they had their owner come out and say like we expect to play playoff games. Like there's a lot of pressure on a lot of GMs to get some home playoff dates. You know, there's financial realities too, and so the Canes are in that. I'm not saying that they're under that same pressure from ownership, but they would like to avoid a step back after making the playoffs. And I think missing the playoffs would be disappointing, but the reality is they're definitely incorporating, you know, Ivan Demidov on a full-time basis. So that's adding a rookie. One of David Reinbacher or Logan Mailloux could start the season in Montreal. That's adding another rookie, in addition to Lane Hudson being in his second season, Caden Gooley, Juraj Slafkovský, all being in their, you know, I guess their fourth seasons, but still being young players. You know, there is some degree of interest on Montreal's side to mitigate the fact that they're going to be incorporating more youth. Christian Dvorak could be a free agent. Joel Armia can be a free agent. David Savard retired. You know, there's an imbalance kind of there's a threatened imbalance of youth and older guys that I think the Canadiens would like to balance out. So they also recognize they need to add talent. They have to build a second line, which they basically didn't have last year. And so Demidov is one piece of that. What are the other two pieces? It doesn't look like it'll be Patrick Laine. I don't think they're comfortable with that. So yeah, they have a lot of balls in the air, but you know, name me, I could name probably 10 teams who need a second line center and who are aggressively looking for one. And so the Canadiens are just one of those teams.
How much does it help them that they have accumulated all these, draft picks and that they're ready kind of to shell out if, compared to, other teams that don't have the plethora? Like, do you think those are all in play? Do you think they're still trying to kind of grow? Like, what's that maybe balance between kind of going all in and maybe, still setting your sights for the future?
Well, yeah, it helps them for sure. They're assets that are attractive, you know, prospects and picks, but Utah is trying to take a step. They have tons of prospects and picks. Anaheim, as I mentioned, is trying to take a step. They have tons of prospects and picks. Chicago's probably going to try to emerge out of the basement of the league. They have tons of prospects and picks. So, you know, and I looked at the draft and the order. Like, you know, Buffalo's picking ninth. Could they be tempted to pay, trade that pick? Probably. Anaheim's at 10. They could probably be tempted to trade that pick. Detroit's at 13. Columbus has already said flat out that the 14th and the 20th picks are available. Vancouver is pretty clear that the 15th pick is available. Canadian 16 and 17 picks are available. So you're looking at a wide range of picks from 9 to 20. The majority of those picks are available for a trade if someone presents an appropriate player in return. And so if you have all those teams kind of looking for similar youngish, you know, young veterans, let's say, that to fill a top six role or top four on defense, it's a crowded marketplace. It just is. And so, you know, the Canadiens have a good war chest of assets. They can overpay if they want to, you know, sort of win that race and beat out all these other teams. And they've shown a willingness in the past to overpay. I think they recognized that what they gave up to get Alex Newhook, for instance, was a slight overpay, you know, a late first and an early second round pick. So they've done it in the past. So it's not something that scares them because, you know, it's great having all these picks and prospects. You can only sign 50 of them at a time. And so they're cognizant of that there's no way all these kids are going to play for them, so might as well turn them into something useful. But you know, I highly doubt they're the only team willing to do that because, you know, could you imagine the pressure Kevin Adams is under? Like, you know, it's like it's and it's not and Steve Yzerman in Detroit is under probably even more pressure. Well, maybe not more, but similar pressure.
Similar.
So there's a lot, you know, there are a lot of factors that are outside the Canadiens' control, and just feels like the timing for them is a bit off.
I guess, like, looking back at the season, obviously Hudson's was a revelation, won the Calder. Demidov, he had the glimpse, and he seems like an unbelievable talent. How much Like, if you're the Habs, that you play the long game right now with this core, and how do you feel about, this team maybe compared to a year ago, about their trajectory in the years to come?
Well, compared to a year ago, they have a very definable core. They have a core. They have a core that they know what it is. It includes the guys you mentioned, Hudson, Demidov, Slafkovský, Suzuki, Caulfield. And then they have other elements of the core that haven't yet, I think they view that, or they hope at least, that David Reinbacher is a part of that core. He had obviously a very frustrating season, got injured in preseason, missed the bulk of the season. The fact that he got a playoff run with Laval to the conference final and, a handful of games, 10 or 15 off the top of my head, in the regular season, like he basically, it wasn't a total waste of a season for him. He got some development out of it. Will that translate into a spot on the team in training camp? We'll see, but he needs to be a part of that core. So that's the difference, is that I think a year ago you had questions, like Nick Suzuki had never really had a breakout offensive season. He's always been a very good player, but how much offense he had in him was in question. Cole Caulfield had never really, scored at a high rate. He's always seen as a goal scorer, but injuries and what have you always prevented him. So Slafkovský still needs to define himself and show what he can be, and there are other elements that need to do that. Demidov, obviously, even though he looks great, but they don't know. But it seems like that's the core that they have to build around. And now the hard part starts, where you need to get the appropriate pieces in place to help those guys. But what's obvious is who's going to drive this bus when they're successful, and it's those guys. And the one element there, you have Hudson, Demidov, Caulfield, who are on the smaller side, and Demidov is not as small as he looks. He plays bigger, he's pretty thick and strong. Same with Suzuki, he's only like 6 feet tall, but he plays at like 210, so but other than Slafkovský, and they were hoping that Doc would be a part of this core. He still might be, but obviously his back-to-back years, terrible injuries. So, and if he is, then that addresses the size and skill element. But, I think there is a desire to add some size around this core to allow them to perform.
What do you think? Like, Lane Hudson, if I'm not mistaken, is extension eligible this summer.
Yes,
This
yes.
obviously we saw the deals with Suzuki, Caulfield, Slafkovský, where this team has kind of bought long term. Like, do you think there's going to be any negotiation? Is he going to bet on himself and wait? I'm just kind of curious what you're hearing or what you expect.
And there's for sure going to be some negotiation, but I don't think the Canadians are in any rush to hand Lane Hudson what Lane Hudson probably thinks he's worth, or at least his representatives think he's worth. I kind of did the exercise a couple of weeks ago, but it wouldn't be very difficult for Hudson's camp to come up with a list of players that he warrants being compared to. And it's a pretty star-studded list, right? It's, younger defensemen who have produced at, a half a point a game kind of rate, and Hudson was far above half a point a game. Obviously, 66 points in 82 games. He played all 82 games. He showed an ability to problem solve and adapt and learn about the league, and he's still not done learning about the league. And so he, my assumption would be he'll only get better. But I think from the Canadians' point of view, they're just kind of like, well, how much more could he possibly ask for than what he would ask for now? Like, it's kind of like, sometimes it's good to like lock up. Like, that's what they did with Slafkovský, is, he had a great second half of the year last year. And to the Canadians, they're like, well, if he has this kind of year all year in 24-25, he might cost a lot more than the 7.6 we're offering him now. Slafkovský jumped on it, didn't have that kind of year that would have improved his bargaining position. And ultimately, that contract remains a bit of a risk until Slafkovský shows an ability to consistently figure it out and play and produce at a, on a consistent in a consistent way, that contract will remain a risk. Now, I think the chances are very good that that contract will be very good, especially in the new kind of financial landscape of the league. But, you know, in Caulfield's case, these guys, you know, Hughes and Gordon waited until his entry level expired before signing him. If I had to guess, they're probably going to wait with Hudson too, just because, you know, it's there's no rush. He's not offer sheet eligible next year, and so if he's asking for, and I don't know this for a fact, but you know, let's say he's asking for $10 million a year over 8 years. You know, if the Canadians are going to do that, there's no reason to do it now. Might as well let him. Might as well see if he can do this again or what he looks like next season. You know, I in my mind, I think he's going to look better than he did this season. But if he does, can he? He's going to ask for that much more than $10 million a year. Like, I don't know. So it's, I think the likeliest scenario here is that they wait and they let Hudson play out his entry level and deal with it at the end of next season.
Speaking of some of the guys that got signed to those kind of long-term deals, like Juraj Slafkovský had an interesting season, and you mentioned how he looked at the end of the 23-24 season. How do you feel about his game right now heading into to next season, and what do you feel the areas that he needs to improve upon moving forward?
Well, it's not what I feel. It's he. I think the frustrating part for the Canadians is that he feels it himself. He talks about it all the time, that he needs to be a consistently physical player, and that has to, you know, he's reached the greatest league in the world, and there's very slim margins of difference between success and mediocrity, and you have to take full advantage of every single edge that you possibly can. And his edge is that he's 6 foot 3, 220 odd pounds, with hands and with offensive abilities that you typically find in smaller men. And so he is still trying to figure out how to take full advantage of his physical gifts, and how to do it on a nightly basis. Like, that's what he has to do. He's often referred to, you know, Brady Tkachuk as being a model of what he needs to look like on a consistent basis. Does he have that in him? I'm not sure, but he needs to find his own version of that, and become a unique player. Like, that's why he was taken number one overall, is because of his uniqueness. You know, and he hasn't really taken full advantage of that uniqueness. So I think there's some stuff he needs to work on. But I think a lot of the outside elements, you know, he signed that deal last summer. He was coming off, you know, just coming off a pretty, what people thought might have been a breakout season. The Canadians entered the season with expectations of challenging for a playoff spot. Like, a lot of factors sort of added to the pressure, and he got off to a terrible start, much like the team, but the team came out of it and he more or less did. So, and there's only so many times you can be asked, like, oh, you think this game is going to get you going? You think this game is going to be the turnaround game? And like, it's sort of by constantly being asked that, it kind of leads to it not happening. You know, I mean, I remember the first game out of the Four Nations, well, we were both there actually, when the Canadians played in Ottawa, and it's like, he was a beast. He fought Rajit Gregg. He did all, like, he did, he was, he dominated the game. And I think my story that night was like, oh, if this is the version of Juraj Slafkovský that he's found, then it's game over, you know. But it wasn't. It did not carry over into the following games. It did not. It waned eventually. And I thought he was okay in the playoffs, considering it was his first playoffs. But he definitely could have been better. He definitely wasn't satisfied with his own play. So he needs to reach a standard. He sets a very high standard for himself, and he struggles to reach it. And when he doesn't reach it starts to play in his head, and there's all sorts of things going on. And I think he just needs to clear his mind and just kind of do more than say, you know.
Interesting. I guess how much do you like looking at this young core of Slafkovský, Demidov? Like, it seems like St. Louis has done a really good job at developing these guys while also kind of bringing in some winning ha habits, especially last season where they were on the brink of, missing out on the playoffs and turning the ship around. How much like rope do you feel like St. Louis has right now as a coach while they're entering that kind of competitive window right now with the Canadiens?
Well, I mean, he's a Jack Adams finalist, right? So, I mean, that helps. It's he's done a fair bit, like making the playoffs with the roster he has. Again, no viable second line. A defense that was imperfect for sure. Like, do you think, I don't think anyone, like Marty St. Louis doesn't want to play Mike Matheson 26 minutes a night. Like it's not ideal usage, or even Lane Hutson, 24, 25 minutes a night. I think he finished at 22 or 23 as an average, but on some nights he was playing 26, 28 minutes because of all his power play time. He'd rather not do that stuff. Like, he just doesn't have enough players to coach the team the way he'd like, or at least to run the team the way he'd like. His developmental value is massive. So as long as the Canadians are still incorporating rookies and young players, his value that way is huge. But I think he's also in a transition phase where, I think he learned a lot this year, where he's coaching to win, he's coaching to make the playoffs, the games are consequential. He doesn't just keep throwing kids out there because it's good for their development. He benched guys at times. He behaved in ways that winning coaches behave, and created some sense of accountability for even some of his younger players. And so I think it would be unfair to fully judge his ability to be a winning coach until he's given a team that can have a reasonable expectation of winning. Even though the Canadians mentioned, well, actually, officially the line was we want to be in the mix for a playoff spot. They didn't even want to say at the beginning of the season that our goal is to make the playoffs. Their goal was to compete for a playoff spot. And had they just missed it, like Detroit did or Columbus did or whatever, they would have been fine with that. To the players and to Marty himself, that was not the goal. The goal was to make the playoffs, and they went out and did that. And so, Marty deserves a lot of credit, and I think it was a good learning experience for him and his staff. So we'll see next year how they build on that, because it's definitely not a given that they're going to make the playoffs again. As I mentioned, they could get even younger, and they were already the youngest team in like 50 years or something. I forget what it was to play in the playoffs. And now they might get younger. So, but the way he's handled his youth, it's Slafkovský remains a work in progress. Doc is obviously a work in progress. Like it's been, but the way Hudson adapted this year, Marty worked a lot with him on various things, and Hudson's just a great student and just ingested everything he learned and applied it on the ice immediately. Caulfield's two-way game has improved vastly under Martin St-Louis, and he's not solely an offensive player. He's not a great defensive player, but he doesn't necessarily hurt you defensively anymore. So I think he has a lot of leash.
I guess like you kind of alluded to it, like this team's expectations heading into next season, like it feels like they're kind of in the murky middle in a weird way where they've made the playoffs last year, but it seems like the as you mentioned at the off the top, the league's getting better. No one's really taking a step back. It's probably going to be as hard as it's ever been to make it into the playoffs, especially in the Eastern Conference. What should the expectations be for next season in the Habs?
Well, I think they should be largely the same. I mean, if they do get younger, which I guess, well, they're almost guaranteed to do that because Demidov's going to make the team. And all the teams around them are getting better, and it's great to say, well, we'll just get, and this is a line that Ken Hughes used often at the end of last season, is like, we're hoping to see some organic growth where our young players just get better. And that happened. Suzuki was better. Caulfield was better. They obviously added Hudson. some veterans were much better than they were Josh Anderson, Brendan Gallagher. Like they had a lot go right for them last year. They weren't really hit by major injuries through the season. They were relatively healthy most of the year, other than Doc, obviously. A lot had to go right for them to make the playoffs this year, and it's far from a given that's going to happen again. But so I think expectations should be that they need to be in that group of teams that are hoping to make the playoffs, and it's just the reality of what's looking going on around them. If you look at all the teams that just missed, Matthew Darche takes over on the island, and he's like, we should be a playoff team, so he expects them to be back in the playoffs. Do you think the Rangers are going to miss again? I don't
No.
personally. So Ottawa seems to be on an upward swing, but even them should be kind of concerned about this development. I keep thinking Buffalo is going to turn a corner at some point. I guess in theory they could and they should with the players that they have, but Detroit, Columbus, like all these teams, even Philly at some point, they're going to start to come. It's going to be very difficult. And so I think the reasonable expectation is that what they need to expect is that that core, that identified core, continues to grow and take steps. And as long as they're driving the bus and they're having success and they're showing signs that they can lead to a day in the not very not distant future where they are leading this team into solid playoff contention year after year, like that's the actual goal. But in terms of the standings, it's going to sound lame if they say it again at the beginning of next season, but that's probably the goal, is be in that mix for a playoff spot.
What's maybe the storyline, and thanks again for coming on. What's maybe the storyline or something that you're going to be really mindful of watching out next year with this team that could kind of be this pendulum swing, whether this team kind of takes another jump, makes the playoffs or not?
Well, it really depends on the next few weeks, right? I mean, one thing that Ken Hughes and Jeff Gordon have shown a capacity for doing is being creative and finding ways to get things done. So despite everything I said about the market being as flooded as it is and how it's not ideal, like if they can still manage to bring in someone to help on that second line, worst and someone, in a sense, they need to replace Savard in a way, even though both Reinbacher and Mailloux play on the right side, they could use another right shot D. Hudson played on the right side for basically the entire second half of the season, actually looked very good doing it and was very comfortable doing it and had no problem with it. But, so let's see what they're able to do between now and early July or even later. But to me, if they don't get that second line center, I think Kirby Doc's going to get another shot at it. So that's a big storyline. Obviously, Demidov, like Lane Hutson won the Calder. It was the first Canadians player to win it since 1972, which was Ken Dryden, who won it after winning the Conn Smythe. Demidov will be a strong candidate to win it again next year, so they could have back-to-back Calder Trophy years potentially. That's a storyline to monitor. And Slafkovský's vital to this, and so he's entering a phase where he needs to show some growth, where he needs to show that consistency and everything that he's talked about and everything that the team has talked about with him. I think the expectations for the team have been unmet as far as Slafkovský goes. The player that they got to perform in playoff environments and really be that kind of that wrecking ball who's really hard to handle over a seven game series. They didn't see that this time. I think it's somewhat understandable. It was his first experience, but he will be another big storyline. Like if he can become, and I don't think anyone expects him to become like this superstar player. No one did, even when he was drafted number one overall. He was not a typical number one overall pick in the sense that that draft didn't have a typical number one overall pick. But the expectation was that he would just be a really solid top six scoring power forward, and you need to see that. So, and Lane Hutson, obviously, what does he do for an encore? Like, there's a bunch of storylines, but it's It's, when you have a developing team and they haven't fully established who they are, like even Nick Suzuki got off to a terrible start last year. Like, can he pick up where he left off? And if he can he hit like 90, 95 points? Can he be that kind of a center? Like, I think he can, but he hasn't done that yet. So let's see.
Before I let you go, do you have a Stanley Cup prediction? We're 2-2 right now as we're
I
recording.
had Oilers in seven at the start.
Okay.
I'm gonna stick with that. What a game last night.
Oh my God.
But yeah, that was bonkers. But yeah, I had Oilers in seven at the beginning, and they've given me no reason to think that that's not possible or doable. So I think having game seven at home this year will make it somewhat of a difference. But that was a big confidence builder last night. That was pretty
Oh
insane. Yeah.
God. Is this like the best? Like, when was the last time you watched a finals at this level? Like, I don't know. It just feels maybe last year, I guess, but
Well,
it's.
last year wasn't the same. You thought it was over, and then the Oilers win, and like, oh, they're just extending the misery, and then oh, like they're making everyone fly back to Florida, and then they win in Florida, and like, oh, they're making everyone fly back to Edmonton. Like, it just seemed like inevitable that they would lose, and then all of a sudden it was game seven, and you're like, whoa, Edmonton could actually win. But it's not the same as this. Obviously, this has been, aside from the blowout last game, every game has been decided by inches. Sam Bennett, if that tips off Pickard's glove and goes 1 inch lower, that's a bar down goal.
Yeah.
It's that's what it is. Or that Trent Frederick thing that went off the post and just kind of sat there. Like, there's this game is that's the margin for this, and so that's why these games are so compelling, because the margins are so thin.
Oh, yeah. I did the one thing, and I know people have talked about this. It just feels like no one, like outside of these two teams, I can't think of any team that could play at that level, like that these two teams are playing
Yeah,
at.
they
Like,
do. I
this
mean,
is.
I thought Dallas could. Clearly they couldn't. I thought Colorado could. And I don't know, in their case, they lost a tough series against a really good team. Like, those are the teams to me that could play at this level.
Yeah.
But out east, I don't really see a team that could hang with Tampa. I thought Tampa actually was going to beat them in the first round. I should be
Me too.
honest.
Me
But and
too.
so they're the one team that good, I guess, in theory, but that series was not even close. Like, that
Close.
was
No.
n so I was way off on that. So I
Yeah.
just, yeah. In terms of Florida, I think it's really hard to find a team that can play with those guys. But out west, there's a number of candidates, I think, that
Yeah.
can play at this level. It's like, it's, you know,
It's.
Colorado's, it's just
Oh, I
a
don't know how they
machine, and
lost
so
that
is
series.
Dallas. Well,
Yeah.
it's because they went up against another, like, they didn't
No,
win the
I know.
division, right? And it's like,
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
and we're not even mentioning Winnipeg, but because I just don't think they're in that tier, even though they won the President's Trophy. But Colorado, Dallas, Edmonton, I think are the cream of the West, and it just happens to be Edmonton 2 years in a row because they have two of the best players in the world. That helps, but so does
McDavid is
Colorado, for that
just,
matter. It's like,
yeah.
it's, you know, you have four of the five best players in the world on two teams. That seems wrong.
It
Shouldn't
does. It does.
happen. Yeah.
Maybe for Habs fans, I'll be like Demidov and Hudson in 5 years from time from now.
Yeah, maybe.
It's not
We'll
impossible,
see.
but yeah, we'll see. We'll
We'll
see.
see. You don't
Anyways,
have to have
Arthur.
that, is what is my point, though. You don't have to
Yeah.
have that. Like, I mean,
Yeah.
Florida doesn't have that. They have a collection of very good to excellent players, and they've built an excellent team with that collection of very good to excellent players. You can't do it without the top of the top in terms of
Yeah.
player quality. Like, Barkov's a phenomenal player, I'm never going to say, but
He's
is he a
not
top five player in the
McDavid.
world? No, he's not McDavid, and he's not Makar, and he's not MacKinnon, and he's not Draisaitl. He's
Yeah.
excellent in his own right, but he's surrounded by other similarly excellent to very good players, and they have a lot of them. So they're,
Yeah.
that's a more realistic model for the Montreals and Ottawas and all these teams that don't have that elite of the elite player.
And Vegas was kind of like that. I mean, Eichel's played well, but he's not a clear, even in
He's
2023,
getting
he's
there.
getting there, but I don't know if he
Yeah.
was 2 years ago, but
No, he was not. Yeah, that's true.
yeah. So anyways, but Arpin, thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. Is there anything you want to plug before I let you go up at the Athletic or
I got no plugs. I mean, check The Athletic. I write stuff occasionally, but mostly the draft stuff is what I did most recently after going to the combine last weekend. And so, yeah, that's
Awesome.
just check The Athletic whenever you can, and there's usually stuff there.
There you go. I still can't get over your piece on Demidov before he came to league, and you're going through shift by shift and analyzing. I thought that was one of the greatest, just such good analysis. So, Arpit, thanks so much for taking the time and doing this, and enjoy the summer, the draft, and everything that comes with it.
All right, man. Happy to be on the pod again. Do you have like a club of guys who have been on the pod the most? Am I nearing that
You're
club?
getting there. You're getting
Yeah.
there. We have Mendez, we have Julian McKenzie,
Does
we
Mendes still
have
do your pod now that he's gone over to the dark side and he's
he did one in January from the dark side. So it was a
Oh, he
good pod. It
did.
was interesting. Yeah, he
Okay.
mince words. Yeah, he's
He didn't just throw out a bunch of corporate platitudes and like and just start shilling the Senators as being the best
I mean, he was
organization in
like
the
that as
league.
a journalist, so no, I'm kidding.
Oh, that's a good zinger. So, okay, so
No.
Mendes, Julian, I'm
Kyle
behind those two.
DeCostas, you're behind those two. I think your
I'm
time
behind
is Scott Wheeler.
Bukauskas.
Yes, you're behind
Oh my God,
DeCostas. He's an
behind
Ottawa guy, so
Bukauskas. Yeah, that's good
it's a
they
bit
doesn't big sign
huger.
me though. That's good. Yeah.
So you're getting up there. I think you're at three now, so
I think
you're
this is my
getting up there.
third. I don't know. I think at five you should get a jacket, the way
I'll get
SNL
you a
does it.
jacket.
Yeah. You should
Exactly.
you have to well not me. I mean obviously there are people
I
ahead of
need to
me.
get
You need to
the
get a
marketing
t-shirt
department
or
and
a
sales
jacket or
department.
something. That's it, exactly. Get your
Exactly.
people on that. Yeah.
My
All
people.
right.
I think it's just me, but
Right. Anyhow,
anyways, thanks so
we need
much,
merch
Arpit.
for the frequent guests, so yeah.
There you go. We'll do
My
it.
pleasure,
Okay.
bud.
Awesome.